My name is Kenneth Collier-Magar. I represent the appellant, William Henry, who is the mayor of the city of Marion, Indiana. I will attempt to cover the two points that we've raised, simply that Mr. Wainscott's comment that they did not know what they were doing from one day to the next is not protected by the First Amendment whatsoever. But even if the court would find that he had a protected interest in making that statement, that the Pickering balancing test would favor the city's need for efficiency of operations and harmony and discipline within the workforce. The second issue is the due process issue, and that is that we believe that summary judgment should have been granted to, should not have been granted to the appellee, to Mr. Wainscott, because there were disputes as to material facts. And the major one was that he certainly had the opportunity to respond at the August 17th, 2000 initial hearing. And we stress both of those points because the plaintiff was not a whistleblower. He was not calling to the public's attention anything that demanded the public's concern with respect to making the comment that the administration did not know what it was doing to the fellow who was delivering the dumpster and to this one gentleman who was walking his dog that day on the street. And then the second issue involving the summary judgment, we have eyewitnesses who we've provided to the court in the form of affidavits to the trial court and now in the record that explained why the mayor was disciplining this gentleman. He was attempting to tell him why, and he was giving him the opportunity, tried to give him the opportunity to respond, and Mr. Wainscott disrupts the hearing. He interrupts him. He won't let him continue. He feigns ignorance of the very conduct that he was being told about by the mayor on that particular instance. So we believe that the case law, and I took a look at after seeing the Judge Bauer, Judge Caney, Judge Evans, some of the cases that were cited, the Burke case, which is pretty old now, 1988, Judge Bauer and Judge Caney, that was that athletic coordinator.
From my point of view, 1988 is relatively recently, but go ahead.
Well, I don't want to go in alphabetical order, Your Honor, but it seems to me that you've all dealt with this issue. I cannot tell you what the law is. You know what the law is, and I think we've set forth the law pretty effectively in terms of the First Amendment and the Pickering balancing test. But I don't think you even have to get to that Pickering balancing test when you take a look at what he said. They just don't know what they're doing from one day to the next. In the record, I think it's at 103, Fred Troxell said that initially at that second hearing, the major hearing which he was represented in front of the Board of Public Works and Safety, who were previous defendants in this case, that the comment was made, I don't know what they're doing from one day to the next. They don't know what they're doing from one day to the next. That's simply a statement that I don't believe calls for protection. Personal disagreements, and we set forth how it started right from the beginning. Mr. Wainscott had been the superintendent of that department. Right off the bat, he was admonished before he stepped down to make sure that there was sufficient coal patch in the county garage to fill the potholes during that winter. And he was told that his rear end would be fired in a hot second if he ever lied to the mayor in the future. And what he did, basically, is on August 17th or 16th, he told a falsehood. He said, look at what they're buying us. There's all these junky masks that I'm wearing. And then he goes on to say, and this is the protected statement that the Judge Lee found, was that they don't know what they're doing from one day to the next. The central purpose of the First Amendment is to protect the marketplace of ideas. That's your Button case. That's a later case, Your Honor. That's 1998 or 1999 that Judge Caney was involved in. And
you know, each one of us writes for the whole court.
Yes.
Just academically, in case you're curious about whether it's a personal view that we know share with the
Well, I think all of the cases that we've cited for you show that the entire court in these type cases will recognize that the city would have a vested interest in ensuring that there's efficiency of operations and that there's discipline and harmony amongst the employees. Mr. Wainscott was not going to whistle.
I think you acquaint disgruntled the employees with absolute fall in and do whatever he tells you and keep your mouth shut, which is a little different, isn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I said it seems what you're advocating is that the employees should do what they're told and keep their mouths shut because they have no First Amendment rights to suggest that somebody doesn't know what they're doing.
I'm not saying that an employee for a governmental union has no First Amendment rights.
Supposing the employee had said, I think the present government in this city doesn't know what they're doing collectively. Is that protected or not?
I don't believe it is. I think it's a
maybe a personal statement, but he's entitled to make a personal statement in view of the government, isn't he?
I believe that the case law shows that he's got to show some important aspect of calling attention
isn't,
to the
isn't
public.
The fact that the government is functioning apparently in the dark, not knowing what they're doing, a matter of public concern as opposed to private beef?
It is if he blows the whistle on some public concern, such as graft.
But he can't say this to somebody on the street that he thinks they don't know. Not knowing what you're doing may not be graft. It may not be a criminal activity, but it's an act of stupidity that should be called to the attention of the public at large if it is in fact true.
But it wasn't true.
That's not the issue. He's entitled to be wrong, isn't he? As the First Amendment, you could rise to the height of being wrong.
You can rise to the height of being wrong.
And the First Amendment is protects you in that aspect.
I believe so, Your Honor.
Well, then why isn't this a protected piece of speech?
Because I think the key is the wrongdoing.
No, the key is his opinion on the wrongdoing. He may be wrong, as we said before, but he has a right to an opinion. He has a right to voice that opinion, does he not? As a matter of First Amendment right.
I don't believe he had in this particular case,
he's not,
Your Honor, given...
It's not a paramilitary organization where we're concerned desperately about whether everybody toes the line and goes marching forward when the command is given fixed bayonets in charge. He was fixing potholes in the street, if I recall.
Right. No, he was bulldozing building down, but, yeah.
That's what he does. He takes care of repair stuff. He doesn't have to march to the tune of a drummer or leap forward when somebody gives him a command, does he? So the iron discipline is not necessary to maintain roads or potholes or keep potash around or tear buildings down or all those things. He can do that and be a critic of the government at the same time without interfering with either the government or his job, right?
Well, given the history of this gentleman...
we're talking about what he said. I'm not interested in his history at this moment. I thought whether what he said was protected as a First Amendment right. And I want you to tell me what was there that was not protectable.
I'm basing it on the key that it was not a statement that was sent that under the central purpose of protecting the marketplace of ideas.
Why?
Because it wasn't a statement that would call to the public any concern that the public would have.
Why wouldn't the public be concerned if their government didn't know what they were doing? Why wouldn't that be a matter of public concern? If you sincerely believe that the courts don't know what they're doing and you say so outside, are you in contempt of court?
Well, I wouldn't say
could I fire you or take away your license? Or do you have a First Amendment right to say it?
Do I have a First Amendment right to say that the courts don't know what they're doing? Not being an employee of the court?
No, even if you were an employee of the court.
If I was an employee of the court, I think I'd be in trouble.
Well, you might be nervous about it, but I mean, it wouldn't have anything to do with your right to say it. You could say it without any...
Not being an employee, I probably could say that if I wanted to. Mm. This fellow was an employee of the city of Marion.
Yeah, but just being an employee, as you pointed out when you started, doesn't mean that you've stripped yourself of your constitutional rights, and particularly your First Amendment right to say something.
But the courts have taken a look at many cases.
I know that.
Starting with your Byrd case.
Not starting with that. It goes back to
about
200 years and more where they took a look at cases.
But I've read your Byrd case. I've read the Button case.
It just looked to me like a really thinly veiled political firing.
Oh.
He started out. The mayor starts out telling them, boy, you know, you're doomed, kid. If you wiggle your ears wrong, then we're going to can you.
If you lie.
Well, he did a little more than that.
Pardon?
He did a little, did he lie to him when he got canned?
I think he lied when he made the statement about the ventilator mask. This
about
is the kind of junk that they buy us. That's a falsehood.
Why is it a falsehood?
Because
his opinion.
Because he admitted later in his deposition, and I believe also in the Board of Public Works hearing, that, you know, he backtracked and he said, no, I bought that mask. I went down and told Troxell, look at the junk that I bought.
Yeah.
Troxell, according to Wainscott's testimony in his deposition, misled the mayor. And Troxell lied to the mayor and said something different.
I got it. Mayor is a very sensitive soul.
Well, some mayors are from time to time.
But
and in this particular
he can't be sensitive enough to be able to fire everybody who disagrees with him.
Well, he wasn't firing this man because he disagreed with
what
him.
What was he firing him for then?
Well, if we go back to the very
start. What was he firing him for?
Because he had made the statement that the mask was a piece of junk, and because he made the statement that the administration didn't know it was doing from one day to the next.
Okay.
Did this in front of another employee at the union who was going to go back, and they were going to brag about how they were telling people how
the how do you know they're going to do that?
Been delivered there.
Does the record show they went back and did that?
No. But we don't have to show disruption, just the potential for disruption, Your Honor.
Well, if the potential for disruption is in that statement, we're in desperate trouble in the town in which you represent. The town must be a hotbed of revolutionaries waiting for a chance to blow up.
Well, the town just got awarded by the Chamber of Commerce Community of the Year, so I think they're pretty happy this week. Maybe that
Chamber of Commerce of what? The city?
Indiana.
What?
The state of Indiana. It's Chamber of Commerce.
Makes me nervous. Judge Caney, however, can address the issues of the entire state.
All right.
You want to talk about the due process aspect?
I do. And in reading the two affidavits of the eyewitnesses, I think the court can see it was pretty clear that in this particular instance, Mr. Wainscott's claiming that he did not have any opportunity to respond to any of the allegations that were made through Mr. Troxell to the mayor. You know, these statements were made that caused Troxell to make two telephone calls to the mayor to say, boy, something's going wrong here. And you know, the mayor talks to Troxell. He also talks to Antrobus, who's the fellow who succeeded Mr. Wainscott as the superintendent. And he says, well, I'm going to have a hearing with this fellow. And he starts to talk to him about it, and he becomes disruptive in the hearing.
Was there a handbook in force at the time, was there not? And were the procedures in the handbook followed?
There's another rub and another dispute in here. The mayor gets elected in early November, the first Tuesday of November of 1999, doesn't come into office until January of 2000. This handbook is promulgated on November the 15th or 16th of that year by the lame duck mayor. He puts it out. It wasn't passed by the Board of Public Works and Safety. It wasn't bargained for. It was just a handbook that he put out. And the mayor said, that's not my handbook. I'm not going to abide by that handbook. And I don't believe that handbook would give any substantive or procedural due rights beyond what he already got. They set forth an initial hearing for him to talk, to be spoken to about what had gone on between Troxell and Mr. Wainscott. And then Wainscott just says, I don't know what you're talking about. He's denying any statements that were made. And then he starts interrupting the mayor. And that is, there's some cases that we've cited, Staples, I think, deals with the truncate. You can truncate these initial hearings. You know, he was told that he could go to the Board of Public Works and Safety, which he did, and he had a full opportunity to respond there, which he did. But it was he and not anyone else who took away his opportunity to respond at that initial hearing. I see my white light is on, so any other questions?
Not for now.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is William Groth, and I'm here today representing Jack Wainscott. On August 16, 2000, the mayor of the city of Marion, Indiana, made the decision to summarily terminate the employment of Jack Wainscott, a laborer who was employed in the city's street and sanitation department. That termination decision occurred, according to the mayor's own testimony, less than an hour and a half after the mayor received a report from a private citizen and political supporter of his, Fred Troxell, that Wainscott had made a decision or had made a statement to him on a public street while Wainscott was beginning his lunch break, which Troxell took to be critical of the mayor's administration's competence to perform basic public services.
Is the mayor sued in his official capacity?
The mayor was sued in his official capacity.
Why wasn't he sued in his individual capacity?
I don't like to sue public officials in their individual capacity as a rule.
Well, if you sue them in the official capacity, don't you have to show that there's some policy of the city?
Of course, the mayor was the ultimate policymaker in the city, particularly with respect to this discharge that's at issue. So I don't think we have any issue as to whether the mayor's actions represented the official policy of the city of Marion. That issue was never argued by the other side.
I know it isn't raised here, but it seems troubling that if the mayor is sued in his individual capacity, he can always raise a qualified immunity defense that he didn't think this was a First Amendment issue or something.
Uh-huh. Well, he didn't raise that issue with respect to himself, and as I have indicated, the mayor clearly was the final policymaker with respect to making the decision and implementing the decision to terminate the employment of this labor in the street department. I think that alone gets us directly to the city and the city's liability. I think what I'll do is talk about the public speech aspect of this, which I know Judge Bauer has indicated an interest in. The district court found that the speech as perceived by Mayor Henry was in fact public as opposed to private speech. And I would just submit that if the First Amendment protects anything at all, it certainly protects the right of citizens to level either specific or generalized criticism of the government and its officials, criticize its competency to perform basic public services. There is an Eighth Circuit case which the district court cited in its opinion called Casey versus City of Kabul, in which the Eighth Circuit held that a citizen's right to be critical of government and governmental officials lies at the very core of the principle of free speech. So we really don't see that there is or should have been any controversy that this in fact was a public speech as opposed to private speech. It was the type of speech is just fundamentally protected by the First Amendment. Now, of course, the mayor argues that, Mr. Wainscott had a private axe to grind. Well, we would submit that it is instead Mayor Henry who used the power of his office as mayor of the city of Marion for purely private purposes, which was to punish speech that he regarded as being critical of him and his administration. He refers to this speech as both in his deposition and before the Board of Public Works as false criticism. He didn't apparently in his own mind regard this as being speech purely to further a private interest by Mr. Wainscott. He viewed it all along as criticism of the competency of his administration, which he took personally, and which he then took retaliatory actions against Mr. Wainscott for having allegedly made those statements. With respect to the Connick-Pickering balancing test that this court will then apply after determining that speech is in fact public speech, there are seven factors, as this court has articulated. The first is, would the speech create disharmony among the city's workforce? Well, I suggest, how would Mayor Henry have known whether this speech would have created disharmony? He never even conducted an investigation before he made the decision to terminate. He never even spoke with the one city employee who overheard this alleged remark, Mr. Carroll, to determine whether the remark was made, and if so, whether it had any impact on Mr. Carroll's ability to work with Mr. Wainscott. There was a limited audience here. One city employee, one private individual, one employee of an outside contractor. How can this kind of speech create disharmony? Certainly, the types of speeches that have been found to create disharmony involve more public dissemination of the remarks, such as calling a press conference, that sort of thing. On the other hand, it's not relevant that Mr. Wainscott was only speaking on his own behalf rather than on behalf of other employees. This court has so held in a case called Brown versus Disciplinary Commission. The second factor is, did the employment relationship require personal loyalty and confidence? Mayor Henry concedes that that's not a factor here. Mr. Wainscott was just a rank and file laborer in the street department. He wasn't a policymaker. He wasn't even a supervisor. Did it impair Mr. Wainscott's ability to perform his work? Mayor Henry concedes that it did not. Then we look at the time, place, and manner of the speech. The speech took place on a public street at the beginning of Mr. Wainscott's lunch break. It took place with a private citizen who happened by. There was no premeditation or staging of the remarks. There was no ad hominem attack on the mayor. In terms of the context of the dispute, as Judge Bauer points out, this was not a paramilitary organization. This was a street department. Was the matter one on which informed debate is vital? The speech, as this court has held in the Dishnow case, need not be of transcendent importance to constitute public speech. Certainly aren't going to argue that this was a profound remark that Mr. Wainscott allegedly had made, but it was certainly protected public speech.
He admits he made the remark, doesn't he?
Mr. Wainscott did not make the remark and denied that he made the remark.
I was curious about your allegation.
He continues to deny that he made the remark. In fact, that's why he
but
was
But we
so
consider he made the remark for purposes of the summary judgment.
Right, right. Sure. Under Waters versus Churchill, it's what the mayor perceived Mr. Wainscott said, not what he actually said.
Right on.
So when Mr. Wainscott appears before the mayor the next morning, not having been given any notice as to what the purpose of this meeting was, not having any idea that he had done something improper, it's not surprising that he was just a little bit perplexed. And it's not surprising that he denied that he'd made the comment. He didn't feign ignorance of the comment. He denied he made the comment. He didn't even know what he was about to be accused of. He hadn't received any oral or written notice prior to this meeting on the very next morning. And I think that gets kind of segue into the Loudermill issue. I mean, it gets into the question of whether Mr. Wainscott, even if this was a pre-termination hearing, which it wasn't because Henry had already made the decision to terminate, whether he had a meaningful opportunity, not just an opportunity. Yeah, he had an opportunity to say whatever came to his mind, having been for the first time confronted with these allegations, not having had an opportunity to collect his thoughts.
Does it make any difference, though, that he really wasn't fired, that he was just suspended for 45?
Well, he was fired, Your Honor. He was fired. There's no question.
He didn't receive any pay, or how did that?
He received no pay. He ceased being an employee. He stopped work after the
they cut off benefits.
They cut off his pay. It turns out now, as we find out, that apparently some city functionary had failed to cut off his insurance, but they certainly cut off his pay. He stopped working. He was not then reinstated until about a month later, after the Board of Public Works had conducted their hearing, and then actually he wasn't even reinstated immediately after that, because the Board of Public Works then imposed a 45-day unpaid suspension upon him.
But he ultimately, for whatever reason, never lost his benefits during that period.
He never lost his health insurance. I don't know what other benefits he might have had, but he certainly lost the benefits.
But he was reinstated in any event.
By the order of the Board of Public Works with a 45-day suspension and a further kind of a probationary period during which he was told by the board that he could not make any further statements critical of the mayor's administration.
And the award Judge Lee made was for loss of pay, was it?
That's correct. The loss of wages,
plus attorneys.
45 days. Correct. So we believe that Judge Lee was entirely correct in finding both the First Amendment and 14th Amendment violation based on the record, and we urge that his decision be affirmed in all respects.
Thank you. Caller Mager? How much time do you have? 1 minute.
1 minute? I'll try to be very brief. We're asking the court to not set a dangerous precedent in this case. Otherwise, I think what you'll have is a deluge of cases in which there'll be a mantra made that by city employees that they just don't know what their employers are doing, and that's going to cause havoc, Your Honor. I see that the red light, it was less than 30 seconds.
Well, that's only means you have a minute.
Oh, I have a minute now. Okay. That's orange. All right. The other dangerous precedent, I think, is to allow workers, when they're called in, to be told why they're going to be disciplined, to begin to create problems and disruption in hearings such as the one that was held for Mr. Wainscott. So those two issues, I think, should be decided in favor of the city, and we're asking that the court, as a matter of law, find that even if that statement was protected, and we don't believe it was, that the Pickering balancing test favors the city, and that secondly, that he received all appropriate due process throughout his employment. And he's still working there. He was working there on August the 16th, told he was going to probably be fired on August 17th. On September 6th, he has his hearing in front of the Board of Public Works and Safety, and on October 1st, he's back to work.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we'll proceed.